Adventures in Research. To melt polar ice caps by atomic power and thus add millions of fertile acres to the earth. That was one man's dream. What's that you say? It sounds like something out of Jules Verne. Well, it is. And it's part of one of the most amazing stories of science. A fiction writer who became an uncanny prophet of Tomorrow Unlimited. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today, telling you the story of an amazing Frenchman who made the world science conscious. He was born in Nantes, France, in 1828, the year the first steam railway was introduced in the United States, 5 years after the first steamboat made its way up the Mississippi. But Jules Verne was not interested in such, for he was no adventurer and grew up to become stockbroker in Paris, where we find him standing in the door.
Jules, what's all the excitement? Jules.
Eh? Oh, hello, Robert.
Well, you stand as a statue while all the commotion goes on.
Oh, thinking, Robert. I was just contemplating the sad fate that leaves mankind unimpressed with the beauty of the prose that flows from a pen and has them quite beside themselves because of a gold mine in Australia.
Gold? Australia?
Yes, yes, I think that's what it was. And I'm sure it was Australia.
But, Jules, the market must be going wild. A new supply of gold should raise the British stocks.
Oh, you too, Robert?
Well,
is there no place left in this world for a man who wants only to write? To fashion a poem and hold it for a time like a polished crystal?
I am not interested in your high-winded prose, Jules. Save your polished crystal for some publisher.
Publishers? Oh, no. They, too, are chasing after gold mines in Australia.
Then why do you stay in this accursed task of being a stockbroker?
To be a writer, Robert, one has to be read.
Read? Oh, you mean published, to be sure. Well, then begin knocking on doors and seeing every publisher in Paris. Certainly one of them will find something in your poetry.
But do you think so, Robert?
But of course.
My mind is made up. I shall do it. Tomorrow morning I shall tuck my sheaf of poetry under my arm and go knocking on the door of every publisher in Paris.
Come in. Come in, sir.
Pierre Hetzel?
You are addressing him. And what is your pleasure, sir?
I have some manuscripts I should like you to read.
Oh, another author. Must all my callers be authors? Young men, never say come in to anyone who knocks at a door before 11 in the morning. He's either an author or a bill collector.
Well, I'm sure, Monsieur Hetzel, that if you would only read some of my
work... Yes, yes, and I'm sure, too. Young man, do you realize what would happen to me if I read every manuscript that came into this office? I would not only be penniless, but blind in the bargain. Now, if you will just take your novel to some other lucky publisher, I shall try to recover from the loss.
Oh, but it is not a novel, sir.
No?
No. Poetry.
Poetry? I knew it. I knew it. Never say come in before 11 o'clock in the morning. Poetry, indeed. Do you know just how many Parisians read a book of poetry?
Well, my friends have vouchsafed that my work is excellent.
Oh, you have friends yet. Then it is not too late. Cease being a poet while there is still time.
Monsieur, jokes.
Jokes? About poetry? It would be like speaking ill of the dead. My dear Monsieur Verne, I see by your papers here. My dear Monsieur Verne, nobody likes poetry. It is a myth and an abomination. The last publisher to risk a volume of poetry went completely off his head. They took him away screaming rhymes. I wouldn't publish a volume of verse if my own grandmother had written it with her fingernails.
Oh, but there are famous poets.
Yes, and who buys their books? Only themselves. They send them to their enemies at Christmas time. And the only people that read poetry are poets, and they only read their own and to each other. No, Monsieur Verne, I am afraid the world does not give a flip of the wrist whether vous rhymes with do.
Well, then what does the world care about? They must read something.
Histories. Big, fat, enormous volumes that tell the entire history of the world. Then not only can they discover that their own family is not any worse than the royal families, but a fat book can well balance the short leg of a kitchen table. Go now. Write a history, an enormous history, and then see me.
Robert?
Ah, Jules. Why is it I still find you in Paris? Have you not turned to being the carefree vagabond poet?
No. The publishers have convinced me that poetry is hardly the road to wealth.
Then you are back to being a stockbroker.
No, I'm trying to think of a subject to write the history of. A subject with a glorious past that...
your mind wanders carefree as Felix Nadar.
Who?
Nadar, the balloonist. Well, surely you've heard of him. The newspapers have been full of his exploits.
Balloons? Why, that's it.
What is it, my friend?
Balloons. The history of balloons. Do you know this Nadar? Can you arrange a meeting for me with him? I must learn more about them.
The history of balloons? Jules, would it not be better if you resumed your poetry? But come, I know Felix Nadar slightly. We shall see if he has some time to talk to you.
Come in.
Monsieur Hetzel, do you remember me?
No, monsieur, I do not, but pray be seated. Oh, I do remember you now, the poet.
Well, no longer a poet. Monsieur Hetzel, you said that I should write a history. Something long and fat and inclusive.
Oh, do not tell me that you...
The manuscript. I have talked till I am blue in the face. I have read every word that has ever been written about the subject, and now I have
the history of what? Ballooning?
To be sure, monsieur. Ballooning. I have collected the history of balloon flights from the earliest times.
Oh, sit down, Monsieur Verne. When I suggested to you that a history might be a suitable publication, I did not dream that you would choose such a subject as...
Ballooning? And what is wrong with it? Mark my words, Monsieur Hetzel. It will not be long before we all will be airborne.
True, perhaps, monsieur. But who is interested in a book telling of the past of such wonders? They look to the future. To that tomorrow when, as you say, we will all be floating through space.
Oh, but a book about ballooning?
No, I'm afraid not. Not, for they want only the future. A glimpse into the days ahead.
But of course, monsieur. And why not? Why not a book about the future? A story of the days when the balloon is not merely a fad, but a method of transportation like the steam railway. Oh, forgive me, Monsieur Hetzel, you are quite right. I shall rewrite the entire book. And when I next see you, I shall bring you the completed manuscript.
Jules Verne's first book captured the fancy and imagination of the public. For here was adventure and excitement. Yes, but something more. A glimpse into the world of tomorrow. It had the average man talking about science and research and progress as they had never conceived of it before.
No, monsieur. We've been sold out of that magazine now for 3 hours.
Oh, you're sure of the one I mean? The one with that Jules Verne story?
Why do you think we are sold out? The Adventures of Captain Hatteras? But I might send you my own copy. Mine now, if you take good care of it.
I would be very much obliged. You, too, are a reader of Verne's.
But of course. And do you know what he has Captain Hatteras doing now? Discovering the North Pole. Now, don't tell me that anyone will ever do that in 1,000 years.
Yet Verne's prediction preceded the discovery of the North Pole by only 50 years. And in a time when electricity was still a curiosity, he had written his story 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, telling of an immense submarine powered by that new mysterious force. His book sold by the millions, yet he remained loyal to his first publisher, Pierre Hetzel, who rarely attempted to edit the amazing Verne's work.
Jules, have you thought of doing another story similar to the first one? The balloon, you know, seems to be the coming thing.
Pierre, the future is with the flying machine. Oh, I know people say a heavier-than-aircraft won't fly. But I can find no good reason why it shouldn't. In all I have read and studied, I can see no reason against it. Suppose, Pierre, suppose there would someday be a flying machine that would not only go up and down, but would do so vertically and could also fly sideways.
Would it be too much for this hazy mind to grasp, should I ask you what it is made of? Moonbeams?
No. Paper. Tremendously strong paper, chemically treated into a new material. Light, yet strong.
I thought as much. Jules, now that you are wealthy and famous, can I give you a bit of advice? Never, never answer a knock on the door before 11 o'clock in the morning.
And so, into a world that had never heard of helicopters or plastics, Jules Verne brought his mythical flying machine. It's hard to realize that Verne wrote his books over 70 years ago, that at that time there were no radios, telephones, television, or atomic power. Yet readers of Jules Verne will find glimpses of them all. And they will also find a giant 16-foot reflector telescope located in the western United States, quite similar to the very one recently completed at Mount Palomar, California. Yet these mythical inventions were more than mere imagination. They were born out of tremendous research, for his library contained more than 25,000 volumes on scientific matters. And more than one inventor has given the uncanny prophet some credit. Said Marconi,
"Jules Verne made people see visions, wish they could do things, and stimulated them to do them."
Simon Lake, inventor of the modern submarine, gave Verne credit for many of his ideas, as have William Beebe and August Picquart, Admiral Richard Byrd. They have all given praise to the man who wrote "Of an Unlimited Tomorrow" and who passed his final hours in a tiny French town in the year 1905.
What is that sound, Robert?
Horses, Jules, pulling the wagons along the streets. Does it disturb you?
No. I was having a dream, that's all. A pleasant dream. I had quite forgotten there were horses in the world. I was dreaming of the future again.
Rest quietly, Jules.
And there will not be horses trotting through the streets then. There will be many things, though. It will be unlimited.
Yes, Jules.
Unlimited tomorrow. And I had thought that it was here, but I was only dreaming until I heard the... Robert, it is tomorrow. I hear no horse's hooves. It is tomorrow.
Lie back, Jules. Rest quietly. Oh, yes, Edward. What is it?
As you suggested, monsieur, the officials are putting straw on the streets so the clatter will not disturb Monsieur Verne.
And thus ended the life of one who, though neither scientist nor inventor, inflamed the imagination of the great and the small who followed him, who, though only a writer of fiction, foresaw and described with uncanny accuracy many of the great scientific achievements which followed him in a strange, almost prophetic, adventure in research. And that's today's Adventure in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. These programs are broadcast to Armed Forces personnel overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week for another transcribed story of science on Adventures in Research.